It is Thursday, October 13th, 2011. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar. Ahead on the show, KUAF's Robert Ginsberg talks with jazz artist Renee Marie, and we speak with Dr. Catherine Sloan, an associate professor at the University of Arkansas's Department of History, about her new book on women's roles in Latin America and the Caribbean.
But first, Obsessive Compulsive Disorder Northwest Arkansas and the International OCD Foundation are hosting an event this weekend in Fayetteville in an effort to raise awareness about and challenge the stereotypes of people with OCD. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
When you walk into Dr. Suzanne Meniere's treatment room at the Anxiety Treatment Center of Northwest Arkansas, you'll notice the framed pictures on the wall are slightly crooked. That's on purpose, she says, to help her clients with obsessive compulsive disorder realize they can be comfortable in a room where things are not perfectly arranged. Dr. Suzanne Meniere is the only clinical psychologist in the state who is expert on OCD. Most recently, she practiced at Massachusetts General Hospital, Harvard Medical School's OCD Spectrum Disorder Clinic in Boston. She established her practice in Fayetteville in 2010. She conducts diagnostic assessments and cognitive behavioral treatment interventions for children, adolescent, and adult outpatient populations.
It's called the doubting disease. So the essential feature that is consistent across all different forms is this idea that I can't tolerate not knowing for sure. And so the different compulsions that people do are really aimed at trying to provide that certainty.
Meniere says on average, it will take an adult with OCD 15 years to seek treatment, because most are too ashamed to admit to having a problem.
So OCD stands for obsessive compulsive disorder, and it has two components. One is the obsessions, which are unwanted, intrusive thoughts or images or impulses that recur to people over and over. And they usually have a sense of insight that it doesn't make sense or that it's bizarre or, you know, not similar to how they normally think and feel. And it causes them lots of distress and particularly anxiety. And then the other part is compulsions, which are the things that people do in order to reduce that distress. And those can either be physical behaviors. Common ones are washing your hands or checking things over and over, or they can be mental compulsions.
So compulsions are repetitive behaviors or thoughts that a person engages in to neutralize, counteract, or make their obsessions go away. According to the nation's leading research and advocacy institute, the International OCD Foundation, common obsessions may include perfectionism, scrupulosity or excessive concern with right and wrong, or for some, offending God, sexual obsessions, and fear of contamination from things like germs, chemicals, or dirt. And common compulsions may include excessive showering, household cleaning, checking, repetitive movement, especially in multiples, because it feels right, and hoarding. That's why treating OCD takes time.
So I specialize in treating anxiety disorders using a type of therapy called cognitive behavior therapy. So it's different from other forms of therapy in that it's really sort of focused on thoughts and behaviors that people are doing right now and teaching them skills to learn how to change the things that are causing them problems.
So how can you tell if a person has OCD?
So one of the things that would be good is to look on the website for the International OCD Foundation, which is www.ocfoundation.org, and it lists common symptom types. So there are, common things like having problems with feeling like you're contaminated all the time or that you might catch a disease. So somebody who has contamination concerns might wash their hands excessively, or they they might change their clothes when they get home and have sort of clean and dirty areas that can't cross. or they might, somebody with checking concerns, or the concerns about, did I turn off the coffee maker? They might go and check that or have to lock the door several times and have routines that they have to follow in order to do that. Somebody with those sort of aggressive concerns might have to repeat certain behaviors to sort of cancel that or say a prayer, or, you know, other things in order to try to prevent those things from happening.
Dr. Meniere says OCD can be socially debilitating.
When we're talking about somebody with obsessive compulsive disorder, these behaviors have really gotten to a far extreme where they're performing them for more than an hour every day. And they're things that really cause them lots of distress and start to interfere with their job. You know, they're getting late to work or they can't go to work or they're staying home and avoiding social situations or, you know, it's really causing some kind of impact on their functioning.
Few understand what OCD is because popular culture portrays it as amusing and quirky.
I think one of the things that is a misconception or doesn't come across in TV that is one of the things that kind of bothers me isn't shown as much is the treatment.
Drug therapy can also be helpful if administered correctly.
So the most common types of drugs that are prescribed for OCD are the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors or SSRI antidepressants. And so they usually start with that. One of the things that is an important fact to know about that is that typically the doses that are effective for OCD are higher than the clinical range for depression. And so often people don't get treated with an adequate dose, particularly if they see their primary care doctor. They may not be aware that they have to go to higher levels of the medication in order to achieve benefit. And then sometimes there are supplements that are added afterwards if there isn't a total response to that.
But Dr. Meniere says some obsessions and compulsions may be much darker.
Ones that have more social stigma to them, like the aggressive concerns or sexual concerns. Some people have intrusive thoughts of incest or fear that they are a pedophile or worry that they can't know for sure what their sexual orientation is. And these are things that are really distressing to a lot of people. And because they are aware that this is bizarre and doesn't fit with how they see themselves, they're really reluctant to talk to other people about it. Because if I know it's weird, how is somebody else going to react to this?
But Dr. Meniere says, unlike sociopathic predators, people with OCD who consider violent acts rarely act on them. Instead, they engage in self-compulsive activity. So what causes OCD?
Well, we know that there are some genetics involved, and so it does tend to run in families. And there are a group of disorders called the obsessive-compulsive spectrum disorders that all tend to sort of run together in families. And so that we know that there's that influence. But there are certain areas of the brain that seem to be not working properly with this. There's one part of the brain that's called the anterior cingulate gyrus, which is responsible for telling you when you made a mistake that we know is hyperactive. So people who have OCD, as they're going about life, have this part of their brain saying something is wrong, you know, much more often than the rest of us do.
Some 4 million Americans suffer with obsessive compulsive disorder. And to help advocate for people with the disorder, that's why Dr. Meniere and her colleagues have formed OCD Northwest Arkansas to promote awareness and access to treatment here, working with select area providers. OCD Northwest Arkansas is a member of the International OCD Foundation, the nation's leading resource and advocacy group. The foundation funds research, provides access to treatment, educates professionals on how to treat OCD, and sponsors National OCD Awareness Week every October. OCD Northwest Arkansas has put together the state's first OCD awareness event this Saturday from 5 to 8 p.m. at Memorial Hall on the University of Arkansas campus near the corner of Maple and Leverett Streets in Fayetteville. And Dr. Suzanne Meniere hopes the local event will build community around the disorder.
There's a lot of people who suffer from OCD and sort of feel like they're the only one to have this experience. And so this will allow people to meet one another and also families to meet one another because OCD affects the whole family.
The Saturday event will host a meet and greet, followed by a live national webcast produced by the International OCD Foundation, featuring winning art, film, and literary works created by people with OCD. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
For more information on OCD Awareness Week, visit ocfoundation.org or ocdnwarkansas.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone from his office is Michael Tilley, the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, sports, and more for the Fort Smith region. A happy Thursday to you, Michael.
Well, good Thursday to you also. A beautiful Thursday.
1% prepared food sales tax question is approaching, and the first of four forums was held this week. The second is tonight. More public discussion eventually. There will be a vote.
You know, this is like, I know you remember that when Jaws 2 came out, you know, the big booming theater voice said, you know, just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, you know, and it's just like this 1% issue. It's just, is it ever going to go away? But, yeah, we're going to go away soon. First, as you said, first of four forums last night. There were only 40 people in the audience. I expected a much larger crowd. Granted, I was only there for half of it. We had a freelance reporter covering it for us. I talked to him later. You know, they had one gentleman get up and blow up at the folks and then just left the room, which is some of the emotion we've seen, especially from those who oppose the 1% sales tax or 1% prepared food tax. They're very emotional about it. There's no, you can't discuss logic or economics with them. It's just they're anti-tax. I mean, it could be a tax to save your mother, and they're anti-tax. So that said, there are valid reasons to oppose the tax, but for most of the folks who are against it, we're hearing a lot of these emotional arguments. And unfortunately, I've often said that sometimes in our community discussions, loud is no match against logic. So we'll see how November 8th comes about.
Well, you have an article on thecitywire.com this week that may give the folks with Forward Fort Smith some reason to be optimistic. Your writer, Luke Hobbs, looked back at the last 20 years of sales tax questions in Fort Smith, and it turns out the city has pretty much supported them all the way.
Right. I should have known this, and I should not have been surprised, but when Luke last week forwarded me his initial research, he said, you know, it looks like Fort Smithians have never rejected a sales tax increase. And I was sitting back and said, you might want to look at that again, surely somewhere. But it turns out, no. The only exception is a couple years ago, there were four items on a ballot. The voters didn't approve two, but they approved the other two. So the sales tax still went into effect. But it's amazing. Fort Smith voters have never rejected a sales tax increase. And this is a very politically conservative, very fiscal conservative part of the state. But I think it speaks to the fact that Fort Smithians can be collectively wise. If you can prove to them that this is a good deal, that the money stays here, they see what happens, especially with the street tax, they see the benefits, that they'll support it. So we'll see if they have that same attitude come November 8th on the prepared food tax.
Speaking of taxes, online sales from people like Amazon.com have long not charged sales tax. There are legislators in Arkansas, and one significant congressman from Arkansas, Steve Womack from Rogers, the 3rd District congressman, who think that should change.
And Congressman Womack and his supporter, Democratic congressman from California, Jackie Speier, they've taken somewhat of a not necessarily a middle ground approach, but a different approach. You know, a lot of the previous approaches were just to force these online retailers to pay this, create a national system where they pay these online, or they collect and remit online sales taxes. Well, what this legislation attempts to do is to say, you know what, the state, we're going to give the states the authority. They have to come up with a program that meets these specific guidelines. And if they do that, then the online retailers have to respond to these state rules and regulations. So it's interesting from a philosophical standpoint. You know, a lot of the Tea Party folks who slammed Senator Jake Files from Fort Smith when he had legislation passed in the recent legislative session, they essentially said, you know, here goes a Republican raising taxes. Well, you're not raising taxes. Essentially, what you're doing is you're asking online retailers to abide by the same tax laws in terms of collection and remittance of taxes that bricks and mortar business owners have to abide by. So, but again, Womack's legislation kind of splits the middle on that. But I talked to him online. And he was very passionate about this, about how he sees that it's just unfair. He understands that the federal government shouldn't be meddling in the internet. He says he gets the beauty of the internet, that it's, you know, a wide open marketplace. But he says it's just unfair that those online retailers don't have to play by the same tax rules as a bricks and mortar store in a local community.
Some news from Walmart this week that indicates a change that could be good news for the retailer when it comes to same store sales.
Walmart, you know, in the past several quarters, Walmart has performed well. I mean, they've had good top line growth and good bottom net income, bottom line growth. But that's primarily been driven, Kyle, by their Sam's Club and more so their international division. But they put out a statement yesterday saying, hey, it looks like our same store U.S. sales in our U.S. segment will deliver three consecutive months of positive same store sales growth. And that's a big turnaround for them. Now, the question that, and we'll have to wait until the earnings report comes out, we'll have to see if they're making money because their top line is growing or if they're making money because they've cut expenses. Because if Walmart's top line is growing in their same store U.S. sales, that should give hope to some folks who, you know, all of us, frankly, who want to see economic improvement. Because if Walmart is doing better on their top line, it means people are spending more.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers culture, politics, business, and much more for the Fort Smith region. Have a great weekend.
All right.
Each year, Americans observe National Hispanic Heritage Month from September 15th to October 15th. Dr. Catherine Sloan is an associate professor in the Department of History at the University of Arkansas, whose research has always focused on gender and women's history, especially that of Latin American women. Her new book, Women's Roles in Latin America and the Caribbean, explores the lives and struggles of Latin American women from the colonial period to the present day. She sat down with me in the Harold and Blanche Gogg News Studio to discuss the details of the book and how she began working on a book that is as intensive and extensive such as this one.
Well, there's actually a lot of research, but very few people have kind of synthesized just the body of material that's been produced since the 1960s. We don't really have any great syntheses of women's history in Latin America for classroom use. But we have a lot of individual monographs that might look at nuns, or they might look at presidents or market women. So we could kind of, you know, work with those, but not all in one book. We are missing a lot of research on certain countries. I would say even in the Caribbean, we know most about Cuba because the Spanish were really good at keeping documents and recording things. But I think that we need to get into some of the archives for, say, Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, and other parts of Spanish Caribbean and Caribbean Rim to uncover their stories. Also, we need more about women in politics. Mm-hmm. I think past historians have described political history as female political leaders, but women participated in political life in a much more varied way. And so I think I'm starting to see in the 21st century more historians kind of look at the political activities of women just on the ground, and this would be the masses, you know, even before they had suffrage rights in the early 20th century.
Okay. While I was going through the book, of course, there are stories about prominent women in Latin American history, but there are also stories about ordinary women and their lives. Was that a deliberate thing on your part?
Yes, I'm very deliberate. I mean, I consider myself a social and cultural historian, and so we do want to look at the bottom-up view of Latin American history. But thanks to the varied studies that have come out really in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, so many historians and scholars are working on the working class women or indigenous women or women of color that I could draw off their books.
So how does the history change when we talk about the lives of common women? What would we not know had we talked only about privileged women?
I think we'd have such a skewed vision of what societies might have been like in the colonial period or later. I mean, it's so true that, you know, women of the masses, they didn't really leave any records. They weren't generally literate. So we have to look for glimpses of them in, like, court records or religious documents and that sort of thing. But what we wouldn't know is that all these women participated in very strong ways in shaping their society and even in their politics. I mean, they were litigants in court pressing for increased rights. And they didn't get suffrage until relatively late, but they expanded their rights in the 19th century in really legitimate ways. We just wouldn't have the full story.
Now, even though we have talked about how history almost always tends to get skewed in favor of privileged women, their role cannot really be denied. Women look up to them in some way or the other. Who do you think inspired generations of Latin American women?
I've thought about this, you know, long and hard because I think about lecturing on this topic. And I think even the woman who's considered the mother of the first mestizo, or mixed-race product of Latin American society, Malitzin, she was the slave girl given to Hernando Cortez before he conquered the Aztec. Now, she's been maligned in the historiography, and a lot of Mexicans believe that she's a traitor. They call her Malinche. But she's a woman who made calculated choices. I mean, she decided that she would show her brilliance after being sexually and ideologically conquered by the Spanish. And she became Cortez's lover, but also then a very prominent member of colonial society. Some say that she might have made the wrong choices and sold out her indigenous brethren. But I look at her as a woman who was very strong and could kind of forge a new life for herself in this new colonial society. Now, she's just one. If you look at the 19th century women, it's really these women that are in the courts kind of fighting for expanded rights under the civil codes and the new legislation that comes out in the late 19th century. Mm-hmm. They're also agitating for what we would consider feminist concerns quite early. You know, as early as the United States, they just didn't gain suffrage as quickly. But in the 20th century, if you think about Latin America, we think of revolutions and dictators and neocolonialism and those types of things. Women were really strong in bringing down those regimes and working for democratization. I really admire the mothers of the Plaza de Mayo. Mm-hmm. They were the grandmothers and mothers looking for their disappeared ones. And they took that really bold step to go out into the plaza and march every Thursday afternoon in the face of rifles and arms and, you know, scary military people. But they ended up bringing down the regime and bringing down the dirty war. And this played out in Chile and Uruguay and Brazil as well. But then if you want to look at the elite women, I mean, we have mothers of independence just like we have fathers of independence. And presidents. Latin America's had mm-hmm. six female presidents, six currently and past. And Michelle Bachelet of Chile is a heroine to me. She herself had been tortured and exiled under the dirty war led by General Pinochet. And then she would rise to be president of Chile as a divorced woman in a very conservative Catholic society. And Chile did quite well under her, and it's thought that she might return and run for re-election in probably 2012, I think, is the next election. So there are several women, and women behind the scenes that are nameless. You know, they work in urban social movements to bring utilities and health clinics to their poor neighborhoods. I mean, they're in the forefront. They're in the municipal buildings and offices, you know, trying to exert their citizenship. It's so important.
It said you need to know where you're coming from to know where you're going. What do Latin American women need to know and learn from their history that'll serve them well in their future?
Yeah, I think if you looked at, you know, Latin American women in Latin America and the Caribbean today, I mean, I'm hoping that they're getting the history of their female ancestors in their schools. I mean, they've been so prominent. But just like the curriculum in the United States, we didn't really focus on our women for quite some time. If anything, I mean, I think the message has been is that they've never been victims. They've certainly been very active in kind of shaping their lives and instilling good values and kind of themes of economic and social justice in their children. And they really are on the forefront, especially the poor women, for agitating for benefits for their family. Now, Latinas in the United States, you know, some are, of course, undocumented and illegal, and they prefer perhaps to stay in the kind of shadows of society, and they feel like they can't come out perhaps and voice some of their concerns because of their status. But I feel like that they should be perhaps empowered by this huge legacy that they came from, and certainly not be shut out or remain voiceless in any kind of movement for their status here in the United States either.
Dr. Catherine Sloan is an associate professor at the U of A Department of History. She visited KUAF to discuss her new book, Women's Roles in Latin America and the Caribbean, and the message she hopes to get across to Latin American women everywhere.
Support for Ozarks at Large and KUAF is provided by Walton Arts Center, exploring the world of stepping with Step Africa tonight. This professional company, devoted to stepping, brings African and modern dance traditions together on stage. Tickets and more information available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600. It is Thursday. It is October 13th. It's the year 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Ethi Agnew-Threemuthalkar.
And with us inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin. She's the editor, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Please don't tell anybody that this is the most fun I have
at
my job. I'm afraid they'll start charging me to do it. Okay, here's what's going on today. And it's a big list for a Thursday.
Okay.
There is a silent art auction with proceeds benefiting the Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter. Bidding began at 9:30 today and continues through October 14th at Poor Richard's Art and Rogers. Bound to be good stuff. Step Africa, the first professional company in the world that focuses on stepping.
Very interesting.
7 o'clock tonight at the Walton Art Center in Fayetteville. Tickets start at $18. Mm-hmm. A Pulitzer Prize-winning comedy is on stage tonight and tomorrow night at 7 at Fayetteville High School. You can't take it with you. Great show, and you know anything directed by Warren Rosenauer is going to be university level or better. He's a great director. The kids have a great time. Tickets are $7 or $8, and you can find out more at 445-1193. And David Lindley, a multi-instrumentalist who plays bass guitar, guitar, bouzouki, which I love, zither, and mandolin.
What?
This is...
Kyle just got excited.
If you can only do one thing between now and the end of the year, it's see David Lindley.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. This guy is fantastic. I'm almost speechless.
Yes.
He really almost is.
He toured with Jackson Browne for several years. And if you've listened to Running on Empty, that album, he's all over that. But he had solo works. He does an amazing – oh, he's just fantastic. He plays a slide. He's one of the best musicians you're going to see.
Anybody who can play both a bouzouki and a mandolin, I am all about. I wonder if we could convince Ezra Eidlett to learn bouzouki. Okay, I digress again. 7:30 tonight at 2nd Street Live in Fort Smith. $25.
And that is a bargain at twice the price.
So he comes highly endorsed, folks.
Yeah. Yes. It's going to be a great show.
Becca Bacon-Martin is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And this is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, October 13th, 2011. Tomorrow night, Renee Marie will perform at Walton Arts Center. She's a jazz singer who will perform her own works as well as some jazz standards. Earlier this week, KUAF's Shades of Jazz host Robert Ginsburg talked with Renee over the phone to discuss her new album and her passion for music.
Renee Marie arrives at the Walton Arts Center on Friday, October 14th, 2011, and opens the 2011-2012 jazz season at the Walton Arts Center. She's received several awards throughout her career, including Best International Jazz Vocal CD by the Academy of Jazz in Paris. Renee has scored multiple times on the Billboard charts and has appeared at major jazz festivals in the U.S., abroad, including the prestigious Women in Jazz Festival, the John F. Kennedy Center for Performing Arts, the Spoleto Festival in Charleston, South Carolina, at the Edinburgh Festival in Scotland, and even in China at the Shanghai Jazz Festival. Miss Marie's latest album, Voice of My Beautiful Country includes traditional folk songs like O Shenandoah, John Henry, a Dave Brubeck composition, and even a tune by the Jefferson Airplane. The CD's title, Voice of My Beautiful Country, is served by renditions of America the Beautiful, even though it's in 5/4 time, and also tunes like My Country, Tis of Thee. The CD closes by joining two very well-known compositions, Lift Every Voice and Sing, to the Star-Spangled Banner. The choice of the seemingly conventional material probably deserves some further illumination. Renee Marie, thank you so much for joining me.
I couldn't help chuckling as you were talking about it, so I'm happy to provide any illumination that I can. It was a challenge, and it was also a real kick to be able to think of those traditional tunes outside the box. You know, of course, I knew I wanted to keep the lyrics, but I thought about how they might sound differently and impact me differently if I took a totally different melody and put it to it. So I had a lot of fun, and I really loved putting America the Beautiful in 5/4, because once I stripped away the original melody, the lyrics just, I got this image of open spaces, of course. I mean, it gives you that. Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, you know, purple mountains, majesty. And so when I stripped away the original melody, then the 5/4 timing came to me, because I like 5/4. To me, it's a very mobile time signature. In other words, it's not that predictable 4/4. So you do it in 5/4, you count to 4, and then there's one additional beat, which to me propels you into the next measure, and then into the next measure. And that was the image I had, was driving cross country, you know.
Oh, beautiful. For spacious skies, for amber waves of gray.
It kind of reminds me of Native American music.
Yeah, a very interesting connection, too. I mean, when we're speaking of America, I have read that you grew up listening to really everything except jazz.
That's absolutely true. My dad played everything except jazz, you know, so I'm not partial to jazz. I love it as I do all other kinds of music that I listen to. I remember discovering jazz when I was 17 and listening to you know, going to see Lady Sings the Blues.
Oh, with Diana Ross.
I didn't even know. Yeah, right. That's why I went.
Not Billie Holiday.
Right. I didn't even know who Billie Holiday was.
Uh-huh.
I loved Diana Ross, and so I went, and I was blown away. And I left the theater and went straight to the music store and bought as much Billie Holiday music as I could. It was my maiden voyage into the arena of jazz.
It sounds as though music has been a part of your life for a long time. Did you always sing, or was that?
Always.
Mm-hmm.
As a little kid, you know, I was raised in a segregated community under Jim Crow laws, and so we went to an all-black school. Both my parents were teachers, and one of the things that we were expected to do was if anyone came to the house, or if as a family, we went somewhere to a community gathering, you better be able to get up on the stage and recite some poetry or sing a song or do some theatrical piece or something to, you know, prove to everybody that you had some value to the community. I was 10 years old when I realized I think I could do this.
Well, it's apparent that, you know, you've really discovered and defined yourself through your music. It's a deep unfolding, not just of your art, but of your life. And,
right.
And I know you've sung in recent years about such themes as broken homes, culture wars between the North and the South, sexual victimization. Those are not typically things that people will address. They're not casual things. You know what I mean? When people relate to music as entertainment, it sometimes precludes wanting to deal with controversial issues. Not always, of course.
I think music is the tray upon which you can offer those difficult topics. It reaches the heart. It seems to have a more direct way of reaching the heart when the message is, what's the word? It's easier, it's more palatable. So it's a shame that these topics are not addressed. And I think they are addressed in other genres. But the jazz, it used to be.
You're right.
It ain't no more.
Strange Fruit comes to mind, of course.
And oh, yes.
I mentioned to you that my dear friend, and obviously yours as well, Bruce Barth, helped you with your recordings on Max Jazz. I guess you co-produced four recordings on Max Jazz label?
It was four on Max Jazz, yes.
Wonderful recordings, each and every one.
Thank you.
I know that Vertigo, one of those Max Jazz recordings, was awarded the Coronet ranking by the Penguin Guide to Jazz, a distinction that has not been given to that many jazz recordings, and congratulations with that. You have your brand new recording, Black Lace Freudian Slip. I love that name. And you've turned the corner here as far as this is almost all original music, isn't it?
Yes, it is. There are 13 tunes on the CD, and 10 of them are mine.
What can we expect to hear from you on October 14th here in Northwest Arkansas?
We'll probably do some songs from Black Lace Freudian Slip, and then we'll do the sweet Voice of My Beautiful Country, because I really love doing that.
So some tunes that people will know and some tunes that maybe people never have heard, originals, covers. It sounds like it's going to be a great program, Renee. Have you been to Arkansas before? Have you performed here?
No, I haven't.
Well, it's about time.
I know. I've never been to Arkansas.
Tell me a little about the band, and I'll let you go.
The name of the group is Experiment in Truth. So that's pretty much what we do, kind of experiment with our own truth and then with our collective truth up there on the stage, musically speaking.
That's a great name. Renee Marie, thank you so much. I'm just looking so forward to you and your group's first performance in Northwest Arkansas.
It's been my pleasure. I look forward to meeting you now here.
Be a good girl and sing standards all nice and sweet. Yes, I know what swing is, but for me the thing is incomplete. And I mean it, I won't compete.
KUAF's Robert Ginsberg spoke with jazz artist Renee Marie earlier this week. She performs tomorrow night at 8 at Walton Arts Center.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Jody Beznoska, Vice President for Communications at Walton Arts Center.
Hello.
Hello. We've muscled into mid-October.
Yeah, can you believe that?
I can't really.
Now we can start talking about Halloween.
Yes. Agreed. Agreed. It has been premature up until now.
Yes. Now we can officially talk about Halloween. And I have a wonderful Halloween idea for all of you out there. And it involves dressing up and remembering the 80s. And this will all come around full circle when we get to the end of our conversation today.
Okay.
But I have a feeling my costume this year will be 80s inspired, I think.
All right.
But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's start in with what's going on tonight. At 7 o'clock tonight, we have a performance by Step Africa. Mm-hmm. And this will be a great show for families. If your kids are I would say, you know, not the little ones, but if you're in the 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old range, great show to bring your kids to. This is going to be really high energy. I heard Step Africa described as tap dancing without the taps. So it's a lot of rhythm, a lot of syncopated movement with the different with the performers, and it tries to take the sort of history and influence of African music and African dance and bring it into a more modern context. So I think it's going to be really fun. So that's tonight at 7 o'clock with Step Africa. We also have a masterclass with the Step Africa Company on Friday. That's a 6 o'clock show. If you have any interest in that, you should give our box office a call and they can talk to you about that. It would be something you could do as a group, as a family. Mm-hmm. So mom, dad, and your kids could go and do a workshop together.
Really?
With the Step Africa people.
That's fun.
So that will be fun, and that is Friday. And then a few days off, we will we'll regroup and get ready for the end of October. On the 23rd of October, which is a Sunday, at 2 o'clock, we will be in the Walker Room at the Fayetteville Public Library for the second of our countdown conversations. And these are designed to help to give audiences a chance to learn a little more about our 10x10 art series. So the theme of this event at the 2 o'clock will be the importance of being earnest. And I will actually be facilitating the talk with David Jolliffe, who is the Brown Chair of Literacy at the University of Arkansas and has performed multiple times in The Importance of Being Earnest and has also taught it. So we will have a very spirited conversation about that play.
And how much is this going to set me back?
Nothing.
It is free.
It is free. So this is one of those great partnerships with the library. So that's 2 o'clock on the 23rd. That's a Sunday. And that's in the Walker Room at the Fayetteville Public Library. Please do come out and see us for that. And then just a couple days later, we will open with West Side Story on Tuesday the 25th. That will run for 8 performances through the 30th. So that's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And going to be a great show. There are some tickets left. They're going fast.
Okay.
I know I say this every week, but I really do mean it. they're going fast. And if you want to get, you know, if you want to get good seats, I mean, every seat is good in our hall. But if you want to be closer to the front or closer to the center, now is the time to get those tickets. It's going to be a wonderful show. It is getting tremendous acclaim on the road. And I think it's just going to be a real high energy, highly professional, polished show. And everybody's going to thumbs up for that one. So then we have Halloween.
Okay.
Halloween will be the 31st, as it always is. Following day, we will have Munich Symphony performing Mozart's Requiem. Very, very excited for that. There's a full choral group that will be with them, and I am a little embarrassed to admit I can't remember what their name is, but we'll talk about them later. But if you are anyone who's ever been in a chorale, you've probably sung Mozart's Requiem. Mm-hmm. I've sung it. I could tell you the very passage that I love the most. It's all G's. I'm an alto. So it's all G's on the staff. But it's a great piece, a big sort of majestic, reflective Mozart's work. It's going to be fantastic. So that's on the 1st of November with the Munich Symphony. 2 days later, we'll shift gears a little bit and we'll have the Scotch tasting in Star Theater. This will be a facilitated class where our master of whiskey will take you through five to seven different types of Scotch, and he will sort of teach you what to smell, what to listen for, what to look at when you're tasting. So that will be fun. That will sort of be our first kickoff event for the 2012 Art of Wine Festival, believe it or not. But that's our first event for that on the 3rd of November. And then on the 5th, which is a Saturday, very busy day at Walton Arts Center, at 10 o'clock in the morning, we will have a beautiful production of Alice in Wonderland with a theater that basically takes the show and kind of makes it into a living pop-up book. So
like pages turn on the stage and then something comes up out of it?
It may be even that, but wow. But it's the idea that Alice in Wonderland makes a wonderful pop-up book. And so it has this great imaginative world to it. And we'll learn a little more about that, and I'll talk a little bit more about that next time. But it's going to be fun. And like I said, we'll learn more about the company that's going to put that on, but I think it will be a really great event for kids and families. And that's on the 5th of November, and that's at 10 a.m. Then that same night, we will quickly flip over the stage and we will bring in The Importance of Being Earnest, which we will have previously talked about at the 10 by 10 countdown conversation. So our crew will be working hard that day, taking one show off the stage and putting the next one on.
Lewis Carroll and Oscar Wilde on the same day. That's pretty cool.
On the same day. I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
And then the following day, we will have a performance of The Knuffle Bunny, which is a much beloved children's book. This is a performance that comes to us from the Kennedy Center, and that's at 2 o'clock on the 6th.
And it's The Knuffle Bunny?
Knuffle Bunny. I have been told by those who know that it's not The Knuffle Bunny, because it's spelled K-N-U. Right. U-F-F-L-E. It's not Knuffle Bunny, which is what we would think, but it is Knuffle Bunny.
Knuffle Bunny. Yeah. And I hope it's happier than the Velveteen Rabbit.
Oh, I think so.
Okay.
I think it is. I think I read it a couple years ago, and I think I remember being charmed and thinking it was very sweet and very fun. So that, believe it or not, that takes us into November. And to come all the way back around to why I think you should dress like the 80s for Halloween, I wanted to get on people's radar that on November 15th, we'll have our second Broadway show of the season. And this is the rock musical Rock of Ages. So I had a plan here. Mm-hmm. And this show is so much fun. It is definitely not your typical Broadway show. It is much more like a rock concert than it is a Broadway theatrical piece, but it has a really sort of traditional Broadway love story. Boy meets girl, boy falls in love with girl. They have issues. They work them out. You know, everyone lives happily ever after. But it's all based on the sort of arena rock, the big hair bands.
Metal, yeah,
and you know the Whitesnake and the Poison and the Journey and all of these great things. And I have to admit, when I saw it in New York, I didn't think I would like it, and I loved it. It was great. So that is November 15th through the 20th. Tickets for everything I just mentioned are available at waltonartscenter.org or at 443-5600. Or you can come down and visit us at the box office. We have an exhibition open in our Joy Pratt Markham Gallery right now with Leon Niehaus and his baskets are incredible.
They are
works of art. Yeah. And that is open and free to the public free and open to the public every day as long as the box office is open. So please do come down and see us.
Jody, thanks much.
Thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Iti Agnihotri Matholkar.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
And it's time for a giveaway question now.
Yes, it is time. And here's what the winner will receive today. Two tickets to the Fayetteville Fire Department Pancake Breakfast. It's Saturday at the Central Fire Station. It's been going on for years. It's one of my favorite things that happens anywhere in this area.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be serving pancakes from 5 until 11 a.m. Saturday morning.
Oh, so we have plenty of time.
Yeah, you can go at 5, you can go at 10:59. And there are plenty of pancakes. It's all you can eat, plus there's some other breakfast foods. You, not only do you get the two tickets to go to the Pancake Breakfast Saturday morning, you also will receive two passes to Malco Movie Theaters, any Malco Movie Theater in the area.
But what is the question?
That's a good question. Here is the question. Tomorrow we have a story about the Chili Pepper Running Festival.
Oh.
So it's a chili pepper related question.
Okay.
Which of these three peppers is the hottest on the pepper scale? There is a pepper scale.
Okay.
Scoville pepper scale, I believe it's called. Is it the poblano, cayenne, or habanero?
I know.
Do you know?
Yes.
Okay. If you know or even have a guess, you can call us at 800-522-KUAF. 1-800-522-KUAF. All correct winners will go in the ceramic cow and we'll pull one winner. Good luck.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 13th of October, 2011. It's the birthday of the cookbook author Molly Katzen, born Rochester, New York, 1950. Went to college at Cornell, dropped out, frustrated by all of the student activism around her. She said, "I just kind of wanted to go to school. Everyone was like, Nixon invaded Cambodia, so we shouldn't go to school. I was thinking, I don't see the connection." She moved to California, then she came back to Ithaca, where her brother was starting a restaurant called The Moosewood. She helped for a while, and she ended up collecting recipes and publishing The Moosewood Cookbook. Came out in 1977. Things like gypsy soup, tabbouleh, zucchini, feta, pancakes. It came out in an edition of 800 copies, then 2,000 more. The New York Times recently listed The Moosewood Cookbook as one of the top 10 best-selling cookbooks of all time. Her most recent cookbook is entitled Get cooking. It's the birthday of the novelist Conrad Richter, born in Pine Grove, Pennsylvania, 1890. Moved off to New Mexico in 1928 with his wife, who was not in the best of health. And there, he read stories of pioneer life in the Southwest, came out with his first novel, The Sea of Grass, in 1936. His trilogy of novels set in Ohio, entitled The Trees, The Fields, The Town, came out in the 40s. Conrad Richter was always anxious about money and was disappointed over and over again by the poor sales of his novels, The Trees especially. His friend and editor Alfred A. Knopf wrote, "I think that The Trees suffered from lack of action and story and gave the reader not enough narrative to bite into and something of the impression of being an overture rather than the main show." And also, it was up against tough competition in 1940, for whom The Bell Tolls came out that year, The Grapes of Wrath the year before. And it's the birthday of the comedian Lenny Bruce, born in Mineola, New York, 1925, who said, "A comedian is one who performs words or actions of his own original creation, usually before a group of people in a place of assembly, and these words or actions should cause the people assembled to laugh at a minimum of, on the average, one laugh every 15 seconds. This comedian gets paid, so his first loyalty is to the club owner, and he must make money for the owner. If he can upgrade the moral standards of his community and still get laughs, he is a fine craftsman." Here's a poem by Joy Sutphen, Bookmobile. "I spend part of my childhood waiting for the Stearns County Bookmobile. When it comes to town, it makes a U-turn in front of the grade school and glides into its place under the elms. It is a natural wonder of late afternoon. I try to imagine Dante, William Faulkner, and Emily Dickinson traveling down a double-lane highway together, country western on the radio. Even when it arrives, I have to wait. The librarian is busy getting out the inky pad and the lined cards. I pace back and forth in the line, hungry for the fresh bread of the page, because I need something that will tell me what I am. I want to catch a book clear as a one-way ticket to Paris, to London, to anywhere." Bookmobile by Joy Sutphen, from Coming Back to the Body, published by Holy Cow Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine. You can read the current issue of Poetry or listen to the monthly Editor's Podcast at poetryfoundation.org. And by the PBS Arts Fall Festival, featuring Pearl Jam, Steve Martin, and more, starts Friday night at 9, 8 Central on PBS. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time to answer today's question. Many people had it right.
Yes.
Which, I said, of the three peppers was the hottest? Poblano, cayenne, or habanero? And you knew.
Yes, it is habanero,
right.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's the hottest pepper. Woo-hoo. On the scale. And tomorrow, a story about the Chili Pepper Running Festival.
Okay.
KUAF and Ozarks at Large, supported by the Bentonville Farmers Market, located on the downtown square and opening at 7 a.m. each Saturday morning and at 8 each Wednesday at Lawrence Plaza, just north of the square. Specialty products and produce, meats, cheeses, breads, crepes, and coffee, and handmade crafts are available, plus chef demonstrations, live music, workshops, and more. Information available at downtownbentonville.org or 254-0254.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Healing Springs, your NPR affiliate for the past 26 years.
Not everyone may know where Healing Springs is.
It's on the way to the airport.
To XNA.
Yes.
Yes. And it's a spot in the road.
It is.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Iti Agnihotri Mutholkar.
You and I will be back together Sunday for Weekend Ozarks at Large.
And Christina will be with you tomorrow.
Yes, a brand new edition of the show tomorrow at noon on KUAF 91.3 FM. Thanks for listening. Have a great Thursday.